Usually when we talk about a roadmap, there's this expectation of literal topography.
Right, like a physical map.
Exactly. You pull up an app on your phone, you type in your destination, and there is a crisp little blue line showing you the exact geometry of your journey.
Yeah, it tells you where to turn left, where the traffic bottlenecks are building up.
Right, and exactly how many feet until you need to yield. I mean, it provides a completely calculated, mathematically precise trajectory.
And the thing about turn-by-turn navigation is that it relies on a closed system. Like the map is known, the variables are tracked, and your only real job is compliance.
You just follow the voice in the speaker.
Exactly. You just do what the voice says.
And we crave that compliance. I mean, it is deeply comforting to have the parameters charted out for us like that. We really like to know the exact temporal and physical distance between point A and point B.
Because it removes the cognitive burden of decision-making.
Yes, it totally removes that burden. But the thing is, when you step into the realm of profound personal change, specifically shifting your entire foundational relationship with your livelihood, your money, and your future, well, that satellite connection suddenly drops.
It drops completely.
Right. We're no longer looking at a grid. We are looking at a navigational landscape that is, for all intents and purposes, just a completely blank horizon.
Which, honestly, perfectly encapsulates the unique constraint of the source material we are looking at today for you, our listener.
Yeah, welcome to today's custom tailored deep dive, by the way. We are so glad you're here.
We are. And typically, when you bring us a topic for a deep dive, we are sifting through hundreds of pages of data. We're cross-referencing behavioral studies. We're digging through dense chapters of financial methodology.
We're looking at historical market analyses, all that heavy stuff.
Right, all of it. But the parameters you've given us to work with today, they literally strip all of that away.
I have to admit, when I first looked at your submission for today's session, I actually laughed out loud.
I mean, it is pretty wild.
It really is. We asked for sources, and you provided a document labeled quite simply, excerpts from the first step to financial freedom.
Just that.
Just that. And when I say that is the label, I mean that is the absolute entirety of the text. There is no body text at all.
None.
None whatsoever. The actual content beneath that label reads, word for word, the first step to financial freedom. Seven words. That is the whole thing.
It is a brilliantly absurd starting point, intentionally or not. I mean, we have no chapters outlining a 10-point plan for, diversified investment.
No case studies on debt consolidation.
Right. The text consists entirely of the title just repeated back to us.
Okay, let's unpack this because I want to push back on the idea that this is brilliant right out of the gate.
Oh, really? Why is that?
Well, because if I am someone coming to this deep dive looking for a way out of a stressful situation, this constraint feels less like a brilliant analytical tone setter and, well, more like a frustrating joke.
I can see how it would feel like a joke, yeah.
Right. I mean, this is like walking into a library, picking up a beautifully bound book promising to change your life, opening it up and finding only blank pages. Does the title alone actually hold intrinsic value? If we don't have a financial manual filled with formulas or tax strategies, what are we even doing here?
That is a very fair point to make.
Because we can't critique a specific author's budgeting method because they haven't provided one. Are we just analyzing empty space?
Well, no. I'd argue we are analyzing the architecture of intention.
The architecture of intention. What do you mean by that?
So when you strip away the dense jargon, the amortizations, the compound interest formulas, all those tax shelter loopholes.
The stuff that usually puts people to sleep.
Exactly. When you strip all that away, what you are left with is a purely conceptual starting point. The sheer isolation of these seven words forces us to look at the psychological mechanisms that precede any financial action.
Oh, I see. Like the thought process before you even open a spreadsheet.
Right. Before you can execute a budget, you have to undergo a cognitive shift. So our job today is to dissect the significance of this isolated title, and honestly, what the absence of instructions implies for your own personal behavioral journey.
Okay, that makes sense. So let's start with the phrase itself, financial freedom.
Let's do it.
If I'm sitting at my kitchen table staring at a stack of past due bills, and someone slides a piece of paper across the table to me that just says financial freedom, that doesn't feel like a helpful mirror. It feels like a taunt.
It feels aggressive, yeah.
It really does. I want the author to tell me to cut up my credit cards. I want the rigid steps. Isn't a title without a methodology just an empty promise?
Well, it feels that way because your brain is operating in a state of acute stress. Let's look at the cognitive science behind this for a second.
Please do.
When you are drowning in debt, or honestly, even just living paycheck to paycheck, your brain enters what behavioral economists call a scarcity mindset.
A scarcity mindset.
Right.
Yeah. Sendhil Melanathan and Eldar Shafir did incredible research on this. They found that scarcity literally taxes your cognitive bandwidth. It creates this intense tunnel vision.
So you literally can't focus on anything else.
Precisely. You become hyper-focused on the immediate threat, like the unpaid bill. And because of that, you completely lose the executive function required for long-term strategic planning.
Wow. So you're saying that when I'm in that tunnel, I actually crave an authoritarian voice telling me exactly what to do because I just don't have the mental energy to figure it out myself.
Yes.
I want the guru to say, eat rice and beans, do this specific spreadsheet because my brain is just too fried to make another decision.
Exactly. You want to outsource the cognitive load.
Right. Outsourcing. That's a great way to put it.
But there is a massive danger in outsourcing your financial strategy to an authoritarian author.
Yeah.
If you blindly adopt a highly specific, rigid method without defining the foundational goal yourself, you are basically building a house on someone else's foundation.
Oh, wow.
The danger of the author telling you what to do is that they are imposing their definition of the goal onto you.
Which means you end up renting someone else's dream.
Exactly. You're living their version of success.
I mean, if the rest of this text had actually been provided, you might have read chapter one and thought, oh, I guess financial freedom means I need to become a real estate mogul and syndicate apartment buildings.
Right, because that's what the author did.
Yeah, and you might spend 5 years grinding toward that goal only to realize you absolutely despise managing properties and dealing with tenants.
And that happens so often. Financial freedom is arguably one of the most subjective phrases in the English language.
It really is. It means something different to everyone.
It is deeply personal, yet it is constantly commodified by experts who try to sell you a universal definition. I mean, for one person, financial freedom might mean building a massive dividend portfolio so they can retire at 40, move to a remote island, and just never look at a laptop again.
Which sounds nice.
Sure does.
But for another person, financial freedom might just mean the ability to walk into a grocery store, put fresh produce in their cart, and not have to mentally calculate the running total with a knot in their stomach before they get to the checkout scanner.
Yes, exactly. The grocery store anxiety is so real for so many people.
It's terrifying. Or it might mean having an emergency fund robust enough that a blown head gasket on their car doesn't trigger an existential crisis.
Right. Just having that safety net.
Yeah. It could just be the freedom to walk away from a toxic boss without facing immediate eviction.
And when a book provides you with 50 pages of instructions on how to leverage debt or whatever, it forces your brain into a tactical mode. You are evaluating the how.
The mechanics of it.
Right. But by only providing the title, the source text you provided forces you to evaluate the why. It operates as a totally blank canvas. It demands that you answer the question of what this canvas actually looks like when you are the one holding the brush.
But a blank canvas is intimidating.
It's very intimidating.
It's like staring at a blinking cursor on a blank digital document. It is scary because you cannot rely on the author's momentum anymore. You have to generate your own.
And generating momentum is exhausting.
It is. Which brings us to the phrasing leading up to that concept. The text doesn't just say financial freedom. It says the first step.
What's fascinating here is how those three words radically alter the context of the phrase.
How so?
Saying the first step implies a sequence. It implies a longitudinal trajectory.
Like it's a journey, not a destination.
Exactly. It inherently acknowledges that financial freedom is not an isolated event. It's not a windfall. It's not a lottery ticket you scratch off on a random Tuesday. And it's certainly not an inheritance.
Right.
It's a process that requires a defined mechanical initiation.
I actually want to look at the physics of a step for a second.
Yeah. Okay, let's go there.
Because a step isn't just movement. If you think about it, bipedal walking is essentially a series of controlled falls.
That's a really interesting way to frame it.
Right. To take a step, you have to deliberately shift your mass off your center of balance. You have to create instability.
You have to risk falling.
Yes. You commit to moving forward, and you have to trust that your kinetic chain is going to catch you on new ground before you hit the floor. There is just a massive amount of psychological inertia to overcome before you take a step, especially the very first step out of a resting state.
Let's apply the actual laws of physics to human behavior here, because the analogy holds up perfectly.
Really? How so?
Well, in physics, you have static friction and kinetic friction.
Okay, static and kinetic.
Right. Static friction is the force keeping a stationary object entirely at rest. Kinetic friction is the force resisting an object that is already in motion. And the fundamental rule is that static friction is almost always significantly higher than kinetic friction.
Meaning it takes considerably more energy to push a stalled car to get it rolling than it does to keep it rolling once it's already moving at like 2 miles an hour.
Exactly. The initial push is the hardest part. Or, to put it in neurological terms, let's look at the basal ganglia.
The basal ganglia, that's the part of the brain involved in habits, right?
Yes. It's heavily involved in habit formation and task initiation. When you're sitting on the couch, entrenched in your current financial habits, even if those habits are actively causing you distress, your brain considers that a low-energy resting state.
So even if I'm stressed about money, my brain is like, hey, at least we know what to expect here.
Exactly. It's familiar. So to initiate a completely new behavior, like opening a spreadsheet to track your spending for the very first time, that requires a massive spike in dopamine to overcome the neural static friction.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener, who might be wanting concrete advice? Because let me interrupt there. This is where the constraint of our source text feels a little contradictory to me.
Okay, let's hear it.
If the first step requires so much energy to overcome that static friction, isn't the first step usually a mechanical action?
What do you mean by mechanical action?
Like calling a broker or downloading a budgeting app on your phone or logging into your bank account to look at the scary numbers. How can a document that provides zero mechanical instructions actually represent a first step?
Because studies in behavioral economics consistently show that treating administrative tasks as the true first step usually leads to behavioral relapse.
Really? Administrative tasks cause relapse?
Think about diet culture.
Oh, boy. Okay.
The mechanical first step of a crash diet is usually throwing away all the junk food in your pantry. It's an administrative kinetic action. But what happens 3 weeks later?
Well, you end up at a drive-thru at midnight buying 3,000 calories of fast food because you relied on willpower instead of a fundamental shift in your relationship with food.
Exactly. It's revenge spending, but for calories.
Revenge spending for calories. I love that. It's so true.
And the exact same mechanism applies to finance. Opening a high-yield savings account or downloading an expense tracker, those are administrative tasks. They're step three or step four.
Wait, they're step three or four?
Yes. Because if you attempt those steps without the cognitive foundation, the friction will eventually stop you. You'll just delete the app when it gets too hard.
That makes so much sense.
By isolating the words "the first step" next to financial freedom without providing any mechanical instructions, the source material isolates the exact, invisible moment you transition from static to kinetic. It isolates the cognitive realization.
The realization that the status quo is no longer acceptable.
Right.
And that a new trajectory is required the moment you shift your weight off center, like in the walking analogy.
Yes, exactly. The prompt you provided is asking you to recognize that the mechanics of wealth, you know, the compound interest calculators, the marginal tax rates, the index fund expense ratios,
all the spreadsheets,
all of it, they are completely secondary to the physics of your own intention. You literally cannot take the administrative steps until you have initiated a psychological momentum.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. I want to look closely at how this document was actually handed to us.
The formatting.
Yeah, the literal framing of the text, because it changes how we perceive that momentum. We aren't just looking at a title page. The document is explicitly introduced as excerpts from the first step to financial freedom.
Ah, right. The word excerpts.
Plural. Excerpts. That implies a surgical extraction.
It does. It indicates the existence of a larger, broader work. The word excerpts tells us that there is a vast universe of thought, perhaps hundreds of pages of methodology surrounding this topic.
Right, like there was a whole book there.
Yet, whoever curated this source material for our deep dive today made a highly conscious, almost aggressive editorial decision to cut all of it away.
They took a scalpel to it.
They removed everything except the absolute beginning.
Think about the irony of that editorial choice. By cutting away the body paragraphs, the 10-point plans, the actionable items, the source material inadvertently suggests something incredibly radical about the modern advice industry.
What's that?
It suggests that the actual first step isn't just a conceptual realization. It's the active rejection of external noise.
Oh, that is a fantastic point. This raises an important question about how we consume information. Let's contextualize that noise for a second.
Yeah, let's talk about the noise.
We live in an era of severe, totally unprecedented information overload. If you decide today that you want to fix your finances, Your primary obstacle is not a lack of information.
Definitely not.
Your obstacle is an absolute paralyzing deluge of it.
It's deafening. You open your phone and you are immediately bombarded by 10,000 conflicting financial gurus.
Literally 10,000.
Right. One expert is screaming at you that if you ever buy a $4 latte again, you are mathematically dooming yourself to poverty.
The latte factor.
The latte factor, yeah. And then the next video is a completely different expert telling you that saving money is for losers and you need to leverage massive amounts of debt to buy commercial real estate.
And if you don't, you're missing out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Then someone tells you that index funds are the only safe harbor, while someone else tells you that fiat currency is collapsing and you need to put your life savings into unregulated cryptocurrency.
It's overwhelming. And this creates a psychological phenomenon known as choice overload, which is closely related to Hicks' law in psychology.
Hicks' law. Can you break that down?
Sure. Hicks' law states that the time and energy it takes to make a decision increases logarithmically as the number of choices increases.
Okay, so more choices equals way more mental energy.
Yes. When you are presented with 1,000 different conflicting pathways to financial freedom, your brain doesn't carefully evaluate each one. It just can't.
Because there's too much data.
Right. The amygdala actually perceives the conflicting information as a cognitive threat. It triggers a freeze response.
Paralysis by analysis.
Exactly.
It's like you're drowning in the middle of a lake, and instead of someone throwing you a single rope, a crowd on a boat throws 1,000 different life preservers at you all at once.
That is a terrifying image, but yes.
Right. It doesn't help you. It just hits you in the head, confuses you, and pushes you further under the water. You spend all your energy trying to decide which life preserver is structurally superior instead of just grabbing one and kicking your legs.
That is the perfect analogy. And in that context of weaponized information overload, being handed a document that contains only a title is not a taunt.
It's not a joke.
No, it is a necessary mental palate cleanser. It forcibly stops the freeze response by removing the stimuli that cause decision fatigue.
Wow, okay.
It strips away the conflicting methodologies, the underlying agendas of the gurus, and honestly, the aggressive attempts to upsell you into a $2,000 masterclass in Chapter 3.
Because there is no Chapter 3. It's just an act of forced mindfulness.
Yes.
You know, when I was looking at this 7-word document, it reminded me of a Zen koan.
A Zen koan, like from Buddhism.
Yeah, exactly. In Zen practice, a koan is a paradoxical riddle or a statement that doesn't really have a logical answer.
Like what? What's an example?
So the master gives the student a phrase like, "What is the sound of one hand clapping?"
Ah, right. I've heard that one.
Yeah, it's famous. And the point isn't to figure out the literal physics of the sound. The point is to exhaust the logical, analytical mind and provoke a sudden intuitive enlightenment.
It breaks the pattern.
Exactly. It breaks your normal pattern of seeking answers from external authorities. You have to look inward.
Well, think about this prompt then. What is the text of a book with only a title? It functions exactly like a koan.
It totally does.
It forces the authority back onto you, the listener. It requires active, incredibly uncomfortable participation. When you read a standard 500-page financial advice book, you are allowed to be a passive consumer of someone else's roadmap.
And passive consumption is dangerous.
Why do you say that?
Because it masquerades as action. You can read a 500-page book on budgeting, highlight a few paragraphs, put it back on the bookshelf, and feel a massive dopamine hit of accomplishment.
Oh, absolutely.
You feel like you actually did something to fix your finances, even if you haven't changed a single spending habit.
The completion of the book gives a false sense of kinetic movement.
Exactly. You confuse the consumption of information with the execution of behavior. But when the text is just a title, you cannot passively consume it.
No, you can't. There is nothing to read, nothing to highlight, nothing to hide behind. You are forced to interact with the void it leaves behind.
It completely removes the ultimate procrastination excuse.
The I'm still researching excuse.
Yes. You can no longer say, well, I haven't finished reading the financial plan yet, so I can't start saving until next month. The book is over. You finished reading it in 3 seconds. Now what?
Now you have to take the step. The conceptual realization has occurred. You have encountered the title. You have defined the terms for yourself.
The static friction has been dragged out into the light.
Yes, and challenged. The absence of the text is not a failure of the source material. It is the ultimate instruction to trust your own agency.
So as we bring this highly conceptual analysis of this extremely minimalist text to a close, let's summarize the core concrete takeaway from today's session.
Let's do it.
What we've discovered by applying cognitive science and behavioral psychology to these seven words is that the provided source is entirely encapsulated within its title.
The title is The Message.
The text literally is the idea of taking a first step. It doesn't describe the step mechanically. It embodies the initiation of the step through its mere existence.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it reminds you that you don't always need to digest a mountain of conflicting data to begin making a change.
You really don't.
Sometimes confronting the pure, unadulterated concept of what you want, you know, your personal subjective definition of freedom, is the only catalyst required to shift your brain from a reactive state of stress to a proactive state of momentum.
I have to say, directly to you, the listener, when we first looked at this submission, I was so skeptical.
I mean, you gave us seven words.
Literally seven words. But ironically, isolating just the title stripped away all the noise we usually get bogged down in. It proved that sometimes looking at the psychological framework of a concept is far more valuable than arguing over the math.
It was an incredible exercise in stripping away the non-essential to find the behavioral truth beneath our financial decisions.
It really was. And as we leave you today, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. Something for you to explore on your own that builds on this strange minimalist prompt.
Okay, what is it?
Think back to the analogy of holding that book in the library. If you were handed a beautifully bound hardcover book titled The First Step to Financial Freedom, and you opened it up to find that every single page after the title was completely blank, you would be forced to author your own trajectory.
You'd have to write it yourself.
Exactly. Without a guru to tell you what to do, what is the very first thing you would write on that blank page today? Because out there on the blank horizon, the map hasn't dropped your connection. You're just the one drawing it now.